Welcome to Safety First with Danger Tate.
Welcome to Safety First with Danger Tate. I'm Tate, and this is my interview series where I talk to cool people about the cool things that they do. Our guest today is an expert in all things river trips, from planning the gear to the meals to logistics, even things to do to entertain kids. She knows it all. She is the co-founder of Riverbent, which is an online resource that dives deep into planning river trips. So our guest today is Michelle Crockett. Let's bring her to the stage. Hey, Michelle.
Hey there. Yeah. Good to see everybody. Welcome.
Well, we are just going to dive right in to kind of the purpose of this interview, which is to hear all of your tips and tricks for planning trips and what to do with kids on trips, because kids can make or break the trip, honestly. So what I'd love to hear about is kind of where the idea came for Riverbent and a little bit of context into what it is before we dive super deep.
Yeah, so Riverbent is a project that my daughter Audrey and I started back in COVID times, as many creative projects got started back in that time. And we had been realizing that she was trying to get some of her 20-something friends to go on river trips. And there was big gaps in knowledge about how you get started if you weren't a guide yourself or married a guide. So Riverbent is really about trip planning, food planning, logistics, you know, checking off the things that you need. We do a lot of coverage of particular rivers, how to get permits, you know, like if you're going on the Rogue, what's the gear that you need, and just helping people pull all this information into one place. We found that it's very, very hard to get this information, a lot of it, without pouring through websites. And then there's a lot of just tribal knowledge that you get, you know, everybody gets from years of doing river trips. So, so just to be clear, I've never been a river guide. I married a river guide. And I think that's what happens with a lot of people. But if you don't know somebody who was a guide or you weren't a guide yourself, this can be a very hard sport to break into, because there's just a lot of things that you don't know. And learning by trial or error is kind of dicey when it comes to rivers.
Yeah. I really love that, because I think it just opens up such an inclusive thing into the sport that, like you said, it is really hard to get into. And I feel like it's intimidating with the gear and multi-days and camping and group management and all of those things. And so, you know, as I was browsing through your website, I was so amazed at all of the information that's there. It feels like you've covered everything, and yet rafting takes so much, and so there's still so much more to know, but
there's so much. There's more we could write.
It's really amazing. So I'd love to kind of start with like hearing some of your favorite things to kind of get some context into like who you are and what you like in a river setting. So do you want to just do rapid fire favorites?
Yeah. So some of my favorite rivers are, you know, we kind of raised our kids on Desolation Canyon on the Green River. That's a great trip for kids. Also the Lower Salmon in Idaho, which is non-permitted, white sandy beaches, really fun, splashy waves, good fishing for those who are into that. So myself, I like a little bit of rapids, really nice beaches. You know, good weather if it's possible. There's a lot of considerations with kids and weather that we can talk about more and that you can prepare for. But basically a group size of about 10 to 16, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood. The longer the better, although you know, most trips, most people can afford to take off 5 or 6 days. So that's usually what we end up doing.
Okay. I love that you just brought up.
Yeah.
Well, I love that you brought up group size. That was one of my questions, is, you know, the ideal group size, because there is such group dynamics on a river trip. So 10 to 16, that's like your favorite.
Yeah, I will say one of my favorite trips ever was a Middle Fork trip where we only had 7 people. It was really magical. And we were able to take a long time, and we had a favorite band t-shirt contest one night where everybody brought out their like there was a prize for vintage t-shirt. And with that small of a group, it was just really, really fun. So
oh, that's awesome. That's how I kind of feel like 8 to 12 is my favorite. So, okay, that's great. And okay, that also brings up a theme. Do you do themes often on river trips? And what are your favorite
themes? It's funny. That was like the first time we've done it, but I know a lot of people do on trips, and I do love that. I mean, we have it's kind of standard activities. Like we always have bocce ball, but our big thing is music. There's so many people in our little river crew that play music of one time or another. One trip way back in the day, we actually had a fiddle, a banjo, and a guitar. So we had a little bluegrass band, just ourselves. So yeah, it's fun.
Do you have favorite songs to play?
Oh my gosh, there's dozens and dozens. But I will give a shout out to Across the Great Divide, which is just a great river trip setting scene. I know the Nancy Griffith version. So that's what.
Okay, that's awesome.
Usually do. Yeah.
Amazing.
A lot of folk acoustic stuff.
Which I feel like on a river trip is so the vibe.
Yeah. It's hard to bring the amp. So
the one thing I did on a river trip one time, I went down the Grand Canyon and I did bring my karaoke machine.
Nice.
Because we were out there for a long time. So that was the only time that I've we brought a guitar too, but the karaoke machine was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, great. Favorite meal. What about favorite meal?
I think the best meal I've ever had on the river is my friend David Brooks did tamales on the river, and they were so good. So he pre-made them, and then he had the kids gather stones from the banks and put them in the bottom of a pan and put a little water in it. And so they were just like perfectly steamed. And I thought that was brilliant. And it was such a good river trip idea. That is one thing that we really are going to lean into on the site is recipes and more meal planning. Those articles, we only have a few, but they get a lot of traffic. And I think people are always looking for, especially with river trip people, there's always somebody, you know, a lot of different allergies. There's vegan and veg and keto and carnivore people all on the same trip. And it's not that hard to accommodate everything if you do a little bit of pre-planning. So we're going to be leaning more into that as time goes on.
When you're planning a river trip for yourself, could you just walk us through, like, you've got the permit, you're the trip lead. What's your first step and kind of what are the sequential steps that you follow?
Yeah, the spreadsheet. So
yes,
I'm a big Excel spreadsheet person. Yes. And it kind of surprises me how many people don't do that. You know, they just, and, you know, I will say if you've got a group of people that you boat with a lot, everybody knows their role and what they're supposed to do. And, you know, everyone knows what gear they have and what they're going to bring. It doesn't take constant back and forth. But we did have a trip last fall where we kind of had people from different spheres of, you know, friend groups. And so there were a lot of unknowns. And that was probably the biggest dependency I've ever had on the spreadsheet. And there were a lot of, you know, some things that I used to think were steadfast in the way I do things, I actually changed for this trip. And one of them, I used to really control the shuttle situation and wanted to like book with the shuttle person with all the vehicles. And I gave up on this trip because people were coming from California and Colorado and Idaho, and we never knew, you know, exactly when they were going to come. So everybody did their own on that. But for the most part, I do a lot of research on some of the things that go to the last minute or where are people going to stay before the launch, the night before the launch. Is there a campground nearby? Like when you go to the Middle Fork, you can probably stay at the Boundary Campground, but is there any place around? Just reminding people about getting set for the shuttle, making sure they have enough gas, that, you know, there's not huge problems with their vehicles. And then of course, all the gear, you know, everyone is assigned a piece of the gear, whether it's the groover or the stove. We do a lot of, thinking about backups in those situations to make sure that, you know, if somebody's propane is out or the hose doesn't work, we've had those situations where the connectors are bad, you know, just those things that can come up. And if you uncover that on the first day, it's a drag for the rest of the week.
Yeah. There was one time this past season that the propane got left on overnight and we were out. We had no propane. It was our last morning pancake breakfast. Luckily, there was another outfitter upstream. So I ran upstream and was like, hi, our propane is gone. And they were like, okay, well, we've got to finish our Eggs Benedict making it all, and then we'll ducky it down to you. So they ducky us down the propane, and it was fine. We got to take out pretty late, but we had breakfast. We had pancakes. With planning meals and things like that, what are strategies that you have for, you know, do you do group breakfast, group lunch, group dinner? Do you break it up? How do you do that when it's, you know, a group of friends?
Yeah. So we do cooking teams, and usually you've got each team has dinner in the evening and then breakfast the next day. And lunch, we've done a couple of different ways. And it kind of depends on the people in the group and how many kids we have too. So we've had trips where we've kind of done floating lunches, but especially with kids, we really try to stop and pull over and actually feed them. And I think that's super, super important that you don't push things too hard, especially with kids. So for lunches, it's usually potluck. Everybody brings their favorite stuff. We get the, you know, we pop out a table or clear a space on a raft, dry box or whatever, just put everything out and everybody grazes. But I've found that it, obviously for dinners, you know, that needs to be a cook team. We've got a pretty strict rule that if you're not on the cook team, stay out of the kitchen. So, you know, it's like, it's so much easier if you've got three people and, you know, they're trying to get used to the kitchen and all that stuff. It seems like a weird rule to have on a friend trip, but people who are not in the kitchen can go hike or whatever. And then the people who are serving dinner can actually concentrate on it. And that cuts down on people tripping over themselves, tables getting knocked over, the chilies in the sand, you know, I've seen it all.
With cook crews, do you also break up other camp chores? Or, you know, how have you found the best way to do, like, who's in charge of the groover or the fire pan or stuff like that?
Yeah, we usually have one person who does the groover each day. And I don't know, we could break it up more than that, but there's usually somebody who doesn't mind doing it. So, and I can't really, it's kind of an organic thing. Sometimes it's the person who brought the groover, but not always. Audrey and I, on our grand trip that a friend invited to us to 2 or 3 years ago, we did the groover every day because we knew how to do it and we were really comfortable with it. And
yeah,
it was like, we were so happy to be on the grand. We were so happy to be on a trip. We were just like, we got this every day. And people are like, oh, we can do it. And we're just like, no, it's actually, it's like our superpower is setting up the groover. So
Do you have a favorite groover?
Yes, I do. It's the partner steel, the Johnny partner.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel super, like in the world expensive. Of like, in the world of Selway toilets, that's kind of a hot take for the Johnny partner. What do you like about it?
Well, I would say my second favorite is the Selway Riverbank. So we've got one of those in our group. We've also got, I really like for smaller trips, I like the Four Corners River Sports Coyote, which is smaller. It's really compact and petite. I really like that one too.
Okay, great. Okay, let's move into kind of, we've mentioned kids and feeding them and things like that. And then you also mentioned, you know, like it's a cold weather trip. So let's dive into it's a cold weather trip. What are things you're thinking about for yourself? And then how does that lead into what you're thinking about for kids?
Yeah. So cold weather trips, it's of course all about layering, you know, and I've found that sometimes you think about that more for the being on the water than you do in camp, you know, so And I think people underestimate how cold it can be in the evenings, you know, especially even in the desert, you know, it gets cooler at night. During COVID 2020, Thanksgiving we decided we needed to be on a river trip, but I didn't want to leave my mom behind, who was in her 80s and had never been on a river trip before. So this is a fantastic idea to take her on her first river trip in November on Ruby Horse Thief. So it was just
perfect.
Yeah, perfect. So, but it got down to 28 degrees that night. So I felt like we were pretty prepared. She did great. The thing that she could have done, she was very upset when our dog, Lindy, Labrador Retriever, got in the tent with her. And we kept convincing her that she would actually be warmer if she kept the dog, but she rejected the dog. So that's good. The dog warmed up another tent, but yeah, I think thinking about nighttime and camp gear, especially for kids, they need a lot of warm stuff and a lot of rain gear. The other thing with river trips that get really wet with kids is making sure they've got different shoes for the evening and like a couple of different pairs they can trade out, because once their shoes get wet, they're miserable.
Mm-hmm. How many kids have you had on a trip, like max? What's the most amount you've had?
Oh, I would say, gosh, on some of those lower salmon trips, there could have been something like 6 or 7 total, but, you know, all with their own parents. I have two kids. So Audrey and John, who was actually a river guide, fellow river guide with Courtney at Echo on the Arkansas back in the day. Yeah.
Fun. Yeah.
So, then I've got nieces and such that have been on a lot of trips and friends' kids as well.
When you go, are you usually the trip leader or are you ever not the trip leader?
I think that's a really great question. And this is something that we want to dig into and write some about too. The person who pulls the permit is not necessarily the best trip leader or organizer. For example, our grand trip, the person who pulled the permit just abdicated all of the leadership to another friend of ours who's run it many, many times as a private boater. So, and the other thing is, I think there's people who are good at organizing trips, and then there's people who are good at leading the trip once you get on the river. And those are two completely different things. So the organization part is very, you know, a lot of attention to details, pre-planning, you know, once you get on the river, flexibility, understanding the vibe, how everybody's feeling, you know, safety considerations. And I think with kids, that's my number one takeaway that I've observed over time is, don't, if you've got kids on the trip, don't run it like it's you and your hardcore class 5 buddies. You know, it just doesn't work. You can't keep pushing for the best camp when night is setting, or, you know, let's just get through this rapid when everybody's starving and things like that. You really need to slow it down and just really read the room. Mm-hmm. When you've got kids. And that I think is what can be hard for a private trip leader.
Mm-hmm. That kind of brings up, you know, some curiosity about safety on the river, right? Because I feel like a lot of times, you know, you hear rivers class 2, class 3, which I think a lot of people kind of underestimate what that means or what that actually looks like, or the ability that it takes to actually run it. You know, I know people who they're like, well, my friend, he's strong and like, he could probably row a boat and be fine and it's no big deal, but has never done a river trip before. And most of the time, I think it does turn out well, but what are things that you've seen of, you know, how to make sure that the skill levels are actually where they need to be? And how does having kids on a trip kind of influence that as well?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think for our group, you know, we typically have, we're fortunate in our group, we've actually got a couple of doctors that often come along, you know, so that helps. But I would think about people who have wilderness first responder, or at least first aid, you know, typically, again, going back to if there are former guides in the group, that's really helpful because they have some of that rescue training. But there's swift water courses that private boaters can take. And, you know, in addition to the rafting clinics, you know, just going back to how you learn these skills, my daughter's husband When he first came into the family, he kind of looked around and he's like, well, I need to learn how to play guitar and I need to learn how to play pitch, which is a weird card game that we all play. And I need to learn how to row a raft. And what he did, he was working for a law firm. He's a statistician. And he basically told them that he was going to quit for the summer and be a raft guide. And he did. And he went to Raft Masters and boated Clear Creek for a summer and got all of that swift water, you know, raft flipping and mm-hmm. all of that experience. So I would just encourage private boaters to, especially with kids, do anything they can to brush up on those skills or acquire those skills as they can. You know, yeah. if they're not, you know, not everybody can quit their job and get it back in 3 months, mm-hmm. but there's weekend things you can do or take a week off or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and even just to list a few of those resources, I know the company that I work for, Northwest Rafting Company, we do really fun class 3 rowing schools that I've seen a lot of people come to and try and learn those skills and foundations so that they can take their kids, which I think one of the most common questions that I get from students is, how the heck do you make rafting friends and how do you assemble a group to go with? So can you talk to that or about that?
Yeah. And I think, you know, for me, it's been really organic because of the connections that my husband has had. But again, not everybody has those connections. Mm-hmm. So what my daughter and her husband did was basically take their friends rafting. And they had this trip that they did every Labor Day, and it was called the Friend Trip. And Harry and I weren't allowed to go, you know, because we were like the adults in the room. And so we weren't allowed. And basically, it was always on Ruby Horse Thief Canyon on the Colorado. For those mm-hmm. who don't know that run, it's very, very forgiving, Class 1, Class 2. You can run it as an overnight or on a weekend. And they basically just took these friends, and there was sometimes a group of 20, and over time they figured out which ones really liked it and which ones didn't. And mm-hmm. so a couple of those parties ended up buying rafts, and now they're part of the team. And we're all planning a kind of a mellow Chama trip in June. For some of them, it will be their first time on the river running their own raft.
Oh, so that's so exciting.
Yeah. But besides that, I would say paddling clubs, definitely mm-hmm. check out your local paddling clubs and, get to know people that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I also think American Whitewater has a list of like all of the clubs in different areas. So that's a really good resource.
Yeah. Go to paddling events. You know, there's usually, like in Colorado, there's the CKS Paddle Fest Memorial Weekend, and then there's Fib Arc. You know, mm-hmm. just go and hang out at those places. I would say another thing is anytime you can take a class, whether it's a swift water or guide training class or just a skills class, like a kayaking or paddleboarding class, just mm-hmm. make friends with those people as well.
Oh, yeah. We've talked a lot about multi-day trips, and I think we'll come back to multi-days. But there's also this whole part of rafting, you know, that's day trips. And yes. So can you talk a little bit about what day trip, what does that actually mean to you? And what does it look like from a logistics standpoint?
Yeah. So I live in Buena Vista, Colorado, which is right on the Arkansas. And it's a, you know, day trip heaven. So I would say, you know, most day trips are, so they're so much easier to put together. Obviously, you just need to figure out a shuttle, which could be a bike, or you could do your own shuttle. But that's really a place to get to know people locally too. Like you'll just meet people and say, hey, do you want to go paddle? And that is an excellent way to just kind of get to know somebody else and see if you've got the same boating mentality, you know, like you're boating the same type of whitewater. You're finicky about one thing or looser about another thing. And I think that's mm-hmm. a great way to just learn, you know, whether you're compatible with somebody else and want to maybe go on a multi-day trip sometime too.
Because that matters when you're mm-hmm. assembling a group of like who to come on your river trip. It's not like, you know, I run into this thing all the time where I love making plans and I love making friends. And so I'm like, and you're invited and you're invited and you're invited. And that is not smart. Like, I feel like curating a group of people that you actually want to be with matters so much. And that's a hard line to walk.
So hard, especially if you have a really, really choice permit, like the Middle Fork, you know, you will, your friends will come crawling out of the woodwork. And, you know, it first starts with, I mean, the first thing that you have to do is make sure that you've got enough gear boats. So to me, the number one thing is who is going to row the and are they competent to row the rafts? And, you know, it's great if we can have a couple of safety boaters in there. You know, do we have a couple of kayakers who are just really steady and can be helpful? And then who has some swift water training and who has first aid, all of that stuff, kind of put that all together. So once you start doing that, unfortunately, it kind of weeds out a lot of people because you don't want a situation where there's only one or two people who have been in a lot of situations. And then you also have to consider things like, do you have a lot of people who are early to bed, early to rise? You know, they want to get up in the morning. They want to go, you know, either fish for a little bit or they just want to pack up and go because, especially if you're on a river without assigned camps, that can be a whole thing. And on our grand trip, we definitely, as the trip moved along, we went to bed earlier and got up earlier because we wanted to make camp, you know, and it's competitive on the grand to get what you want. So I think that's a huge thing. And you can have different trips with different people, you know, like I can go either way. If we're going to go to bed early and get up early, I can do that. But if we want to stay up and play guitar till 2 a.m, I'm okay with that too. So,
yeah, no, that's a really interesting consideration that I hadn't thought of because I've been that person where I'm like, oh, I'm on vacation. Like I just want to sleep in and like mose, like slow coffee and then kind of keep going. But I've also been the person where I'm like, we have to get to this hike. It's so worth it. We have to get there. And so
exactly.
Yeah. And that can cause a lot of conflict. And
it can cause a lot of conflict. Yes.
Drama is not fun on the river, especially on like a river trip like the Grand Canyon, right? Drama is kind of annoying.
And I think that's one of the things that causes most of the contention is pacing. And timing of a river trip on a private trip, you know, obviously on a commercial trip, there's a schedule and, you know, that's what it is. But on a private trip, the difference between the early risers and the late risers can really cause a lot of hard feelings.
Have you had experiences on multi-days where you've had to kind of like get through conflict or, you know, what are ways that you've seen conflict play out?
You know, I would say happily, you know, we haven't really had a lot of conflicts. I would say the only more tense discussions we have are around kids and whether, you know, whether we should just stop and camp or whether we should keep going and get the most awesome camp that's down the line. And that's where I think the parents, of the kids ideally speak up and say, we've got to stop. You know, the kids need a break. They're hungry. They're wet. We're, you know, we need to do something else here.
Before you had kids and before you started bringing kids on river trips, did you do a bunch without kids?
Yeah. We did it. We did a ton of stuff. And I would say, you know, there's a time where they're really so little, you know, you can't do anything. You can't take them on river trips. And then there's a little lull where everybody is super busy. And then you remember that you're a river person and you start taking your kids on trips again. So it's my daughter, Audrey. She now has a 2.5, almost 3-year-old and a 5-month-old, 6-month-old. So the older one, she's now been on 2 or 3 river trips and we'll take her on the Chama. And, we did the San Juan with her last summer and, it was quite a weather event. There was flash. It was that huge flash flood where the, Lime Creek blew out and there was a party who lost all of their stuff and had to hike out. So we had a 2-year-old on the trip, but It was a very comfortable group. I mean, we all have been boating together for years. We had a couple of older kids, my niece and nephew as well. And I think there was a lot of rain on that trip. She did great. And I think it was partly because nobody else was freaked out on the trip. You know, we'd seen rain before, we'd seen flash floods. And to this day, whenever it starts to rain, she goes, it's time to get it in our tent. So it's like, that's the one thing that she learned. So, so I think, seeing, that situation, even with a 2-year-old, we all got through it. She has great memories of that trip. Just reminds me that you can probably take kids on river trips earlier than you think, you know, being very careful and just making sure that you're aware of what the weather could do. And I would say that's the one thing to keep in mind is the weather changes all the time. So just think that through.
That kind of raises two questions for me. The first is, do you have a favorite PFD for kids? And the second is, falling out of a boat is part of a river trip. Rafts flipping is part of a river trip. That's just part of the game. How do you make sure kids are comfortable? I feel so lucky that I'm comfortable on a river. And I think it's because I grew up that way. But how do you make kids, especially ones who are more, have a tendency to be scared of things? How do you manage that?
So first of all, the life jacket, the best one for really little kids is Mustang Survival. And they've got a couple of them, but there's one that, is even for kids up to 30 pounds. And then they've got a youth one up to 50. And then I think when you get into the 50 to 90 pound range, Astral has a good one. So there's now, really good options for even, little kids. And then I would say for the really little kids, we're not going to be on rivers that are more than class one or class two at the most, you know, for the really little ones. But my number one tip for people with taking little kids on even float trips is you need to have one adult focused on the kid at all times. You can't have, you can't row a boat and watch a kid in a raft at the same time. So, not only in the boat, but on in camp, you know, they're always climbing on rocks and trying to fall off or, you know, trying to play with the stove or just wandering down to the river. And, you know, so you have to have eyes on the kid all the time. This seems really, really obvious, but in the chaos of a river trip and you just pull into the bank and you're trying to get stuff unloaded, it's easy to take your eyes off the kid. So obviously you can't do that. So, so, but I would say as far as comfort level on the water, I can't think of a time when any kid on our trip was actually nervous about the water. So, and I think it was because, they just kind of grew up doing it and they felt, pretty comfortable. Of course, a lot of the rivers that we would do with kids like Desso, I mean, the big problem was trying to get them out of the water because they, it's hot and they just want to be in the water. You know? It's like, we're actually coming up to some waves. You have to get in the boat, you know, and they've been floating alongside the boat or in a little tube attached to the raft or whatever. So I personally have not run into that.
Okay. I think, you know, what I kind of take away from a few different things that you've said is kids read parents so much and they're really good at reading the vibe and they compute it in whatever way they're going to compute it. And so I think, you know, you mentioned with the 2-year-old on the San Juan, no one was freaking out. So they were fine. And so I think when I have seen kids anxious about the water, it's not because they're anxious. It's because whoever their adult is anxious. And nervous. And so I think with deciding to bring kids, it's almost like the first question has to be, okay, well, how am I feeling about this?
Exactly.
Am I going to be nervous? Because if I'm going to be nervous, my kid's going to see that and they're going to be terrified because I'm terrified, you know? And 100%. I see that with commercial trips too, is like the parents who are really like, no, Johnny, don't get in the water. Don't get in the water. where really, you know, the guides are saying, Johnny, it's really fun. Like, you're going to have a blast. And that's, that makes sense to me. And it's not a problem. And it's something, you know, the guides, we, I don't know if deal with is the right word, but we acknowledge and we're like, okay, Johnny, I get it. Like, your mom's feeling some sort of way, but let's just try it. And if you hate it, let's not do it. But I think with bringing kids, especially on a private trip, you know, they just, they read and they remember the weirdest things. Like, I remember really random stuff from growing up. I remember this one time on the San Juan, there was, you know, on the San Juan, when it's low water, there's just sandbars everywhere.
Yes. Yeah.
And before you know it, everyone's out pulling the raft, and I was wearing a down coat, and I fell into the water, and my down coat got all wet. And I just remember looking at my mom being like, what? What? But yeah, I think it's the adults. And so I think with, you know, going back to making sure you take courses or, you know, do the things that you need as an adult to feel comfortable before you bring in the X factor that is your family, the people that you care about the very most, you know, because you don't, because river trips should be fun. Like, they should just be like one of the funnest things you can do. And if you're scared the whole time, that is so not fun.
And I think it's funny, you know, different families have different tolerances for outdoor adventures, but generally families who are used to camping a lot or, you know, just being outside, they'll usually do pretty well on the river. And I think, you know, like the 2-year-old, she got stung by a bee, and, you know, that was drama for a minute, but, and definitely things that, that come up, but in general, kids are so resilient. And if you don't freak out, they don't freak out, as you said.
I'm curious again about the trip leading aspect of it, especially with private groups. I had a trip leader on a Grand Canyon trip, and she was so great and just checked in, you know, every day with different boat captains of just like, well, how are you feeling, you know, and things like that. And those are nice little soft touches that I think, you know, leading a trip is important. What are tricks and tips that you have for trip leaders to just continue to read the vibe and stuff like that? What do you do?
Yeah, I think, first of all, it's checking in on timing, you know, about just the general plan for the day, and either doing that the night before or the next morning. Talking about, you know, we usually gather in the morning. This is very informal, you know, on a private trip, but take a look at the guide, see how far you want to go. Where generally do we want to stop for lunch? If it's a trip with a lot of whitewater, we'll talk about what we're going to scout, what we're not going to scout. The other thing that we talk about a lot, which might be surprising for a private trip, is boat order, you know, like who is generally the pilot, you know, who's going to be in the lead, who's going to run sweep, what everybody's roles are in between. And then we have pretty, you know, just try to make it comfortable. Are you comfortable rowing this? Do you want somebody else to row this? You know, and make it not a big deal. It's like, you know, our point is to be out under the stars and to enjoy the river and not to have people freaked out or wrap their boat if you know, if you can avoid it. So
have you had to deal
as easy as you can?
Have you had to deal with big wraps and flips and things like that?
You know, we have had, I personally have been in a couple of boats that have flipped, but I've never been in a wrap, I would say. I mean, I paddle a kayak and an IK too, and I can say there's plenty of flips there and plenty of swims, but yeah, we've definitely had swimmers and such, boat flips, but those come back over. There's never really been any really big rescue, which is surprising because we do probably 3 or 4 or 5 multi-day trips a year and a lot of day trips. So so pretty
amazing.
You know, probably just as a group, pretty conservative, I would say, in what we're running, and you know, just taking your time, scouting thoroughly, making it really comfortable and easy for people to let somebody else row if they're not feeling it.
I mean, heck, that brings up the whole thing of like ego in rafting, but I think that's just a part of it. I don't think we need to dive.
I think that's just a part of it. And
that's just a part of
again, yeah, the more comfortable the, you know, and this is this kind of approach to you've got your river crew. If it's always the same people, there's good and bad to that. You know, it's like, you know, how everyone takes their coffee and, you know, how kind of what their approach to scouting, you know, I've got a friend who was a guide in California. And when she looks at a rapid, she wants to look at it for X amount of time, and then she wants to run it. She does not want to sit there and look at it all day. And other people are like, well, I want to look at it from this angle, and now I want to look at it. And she's like, come on, people, let's go, let's go. So there's different approaches there, but I think over time, the more comfortable you are with your group, and I think you can get there quickly with new people if you're open to having those conversations. A lot of people may not even think to talk about the order of the boats or, you know, who does what. But I think on a private trip, it's even more important.
I also think sharing information with people who are new on a multi-day can go a lot of ways. I mean, it's like learning anything new. But I think like what I love about Riverbent is, you know, this is now a place where you can be like, okay, I'm bringing all of these new people on a river, and you can literally give them homework and be like, this is an like a great page for you to just look through stuff. And that way you're not as reliant on me to tell you everything, and we can both enjoy it more. And I have no problem answering questions and stuff like that, but giving them some independence in like a totally new place, I think that's really amazing with Riverbent. And so I'm excited to like send people that way to be like, learn as much as you can before so you can enjoy it and not be nervous.
So. Yeah. And as a trip leader, one thing that we're really careful with new people is making sure they understand how the Groover works, because that can be an uncomfortable topic. And so you want to make people be comfortable with that and just, you know,
What's your favorite method? What's your favorite method for knowing that it's locked?
Or exactly. So we usually have a paddle. The paddle is across the trail that leads to the Groover. That means somebody's in there. And if it's pointing up the trail, or we'll do something like a throw bag, that if throw bag's there, somebody, you're free to take it and go, but you bring it with like something that you bring with you. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. I have such deep toilet paper insecurity that there's not going to be enough. So I bring so much. Like, we need toilet paper. You don't understand.
Deep coffee insecurity. So what? I always, no matter how much coffee, the person who's doing the coffee says they're going to bring, I bring 2 or 3 pounds myself, literally.
Okay. So. What is your coffee method?
So my favorite method is, we've got the big GSI, like the biggest one you can get, the big silver pot. And that's actually my favorite one, because it makes like, I think it says 36 cups on the side, which means like 4 cups for me, but it's huge. Second is,
wait, is it a French press? I haven't seen that one.
No, it's a percolator. It's an old fashioned, stove percolator. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It makes awesome coffee. My second favorite is the press. And, the biggest one that we have, I love it, is one that's made by, I think it's Planetary Design out of Montana, the Brewtech, and it's huge and it's very insulated. So once you push that plunger down, it stays hot for a long time.
Oh, awesome.
The other thing that I have found, we don't have a blaster stove, but I really want one so that you can have the coffee in a separate thing. And then on the 2-burner stove, people are doing pancakes and a scramble, and that burner can be doing coffee. The other thing I'm learning is there are a lot of people who are not into coffee and they want tea. So bring a separate kettle that you can do hot water with. That will make people very happy. And we want everyone to be happy with their morning drink. There's nothing more miserable than not having, you know, nut pods if you need it, or half and half or whatever. So,
oh, the half and half is key. That's like,
it's not for me, but I have learned that it is for others. So I'm mending my ways and it's on the list now.
The thing that I do sometimes is I'm like, okay, well, there's no half and half, but we do have hot chocolate and I can't drink coffee black because I'm not that badass yet. But one day, mark my
words.
One day
you will be.
I will be a badass and I will drink black coffee. But
yeah,
for
it makes
now,
your life
okay
a lot
with,
easier.
I mean, I'm okay with being high maintenance because rafting, you can literally bring whatever you want.
Yes. Yes.
But have you ever had someone show up and be like, okay, really? That's too many bags. Or are you always like, okay, bring it on?
I don't think, I mean, there's definitely times where we've almost run out of room, but I would say we've never really had to leave anything behind, even the guitar. The guitar, I mean, I think I would bring my guitar before I would bring my sleeping bag, maybe, but kind of kidding, but not really.
I can tell it. You're not kidding at all. You're like, it's coming.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, let's see if, let me just look and see. Oh, okay. The other thing I wanted to ask is, do you have like a favorite chore? I mean, I know on the Grand Canyon you did the Groover, but like if you had to do one chore for a river trip, and then do you have a least favorite chore where you're like, I will literally do anything else? And there's a lot of chores.
I think my favorite chore is just really about the kitchen setup, you know, and we usually, whoever's cooking dinner that night, they get to say where everything goes. But I, when it's my turn to cook, I just love like setting up the kitchen and getting everything that I want it. My least favorite chore is, it almost makes me, and you know, there's been so many fire bans, this is almost a moot point. Mm-hmm. But when you have a fire, cleaning out the fire pan the next morning and dealing with the ashes, I hate that. So
me too.
Yeah. But we're, you know, there's been so many trips lately where we just do Lucy lights, you know, a nice little configuration and call it good. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's one of the best pro tips I think I've heard the whole time is lights to look at in a chair circle.
Yeah.
It's amazing what it does. Like it, they don't need to change. They just a light to look at simulates a fire. I mean, that's like, I'd almost reach as like the basic human need of something.
Yes. Without the mess and without worrying about the kids stumbling into it or dogs getting into it. I have so many Lucy lights. I mean, we use them for everything. For, you mentioned camp decorations. I would say we could probably level up on that, but we definitely use them to light the path to the Groover, to light the path down to, you know, the boats. If it's really super dark, you don't want people stumbling around. I love Lucy.
Okay, I thought of one more really important thing that we haven't talked about yet is trash management.
Yes.
How do you do it?
So we have an old Bill's bag that has a pinhole leak in it. And we used that for our main trash. So we crunch it down as much as possible. We do separate the recycling from the trash and try to deal with that at the end. So that's kind of our number one thing because that gives us a lot of room. And we use, to collect the trash, we use one of those pop-up laundry baskets that you can get like at Target. And it like, you just twist it and it comes down flat. But that makes a shape that you can put your actual trash bag in. Okay. So we get the heavy duty contractor bags from Ace Hardware, put those in the little laundry basket. And then the next morning you seal that, you know, tie that up and put it in the red Bill's bag. If it's a smaller trip, sometimes we crunch everything down into an ammo can instead.
Okay. I haven't heard that method before, but I always think about that. Trash is tough. So that's
trash
really
is tough.
Smart.
Yeah.
Trash is tough. Let's see. We had a comment come in, and I learned I can make it show on the screen.
Awesome. Okay.
Great stuff. Did we discuss how manage workloads amongst crew? We talked about it a little bit. But just to kind of recap that, different cook crews you mentioned.
Yeah, different cook crews, and the way we do it too. Not everyone likes this, but what we do is, if you're on the kitchen crew, you're also doing dishes,
Oh, nice.
and then you pack up the kitchen the next morning, and then you're done.
Okay.
So the idea is, when you're off, you're off, and for me, that solves a lot of conflicts, because if somebody in the crew wants to go for a hike, and it's just like, it's just too messy if you don't do it that way. And then we have usually one person or two people who are just on the Gruber for the whole trip. And I'm trying to think what other, I think just good river etiquette includes looking around and seeing what needs to be done and pitching in. And I think most people know that, but if there's a bunch of stuff sitting on the bank that needs to go down to the, or in camp that needs to go down the boats, and you've already got your stuff packed up, help with that. So with our group, there's a lot of, especially for the person who's rowing the boat, what do you need? What can I get you next? Do you want this dry bag? And every person who runs a raft is very picky about how their raft gets rigged.
A hundred
So you
percent.
just kind of present them to things as they ask for it.
Yeah. And which also makes me think, when you get to camp, I mean, setting up the feng shui is really fun. Are you pro going to find a campsite first, or what's your method for
So
when
the
you
people who
arrive?
are in charge of dinner, they set up the kitchen first, like before they do anything else, just to get the home base established, get the coolers up, get the food up. And the reason for that is, there's always a kid who is starving. And that's like, I would say, for parents taking their kids on river trips, make your food and water accessible all the time on the boat, so that there should not be a reason for them to roll into the camp starving. So, but even all of that said, it just is really helpful, because some people, they're just looking around for their stuff. There's so much to say about the kitchen setup and what food is in what coolers. We could probably talk for another hour about that, but we are very pro not bringing any raw meat or chicken or anything on like that on the river. So almost everybody in our crew, like, makes a curry or whatever, and then snap seal, like vacuum seals it and freezes it beforehand, which helps with cooler management too, because it keeps the cooler really cold. And then when you get to camp, you're basically just boiling up rice and heating up the curry, and you're done. So
So
that
smart.
makes that go faster. Anyway, the river crew does that, and then when they're done with that initial setup, they don't have to be start cooking. Then they go and set up their tents.
Okay. Yeah, I love that. Man, I feel like we talked about so much, and yet there's still so much, but I think that's a great thing, because that's all of the resources that people need are on Riverbend, and so they can
Yeah, and I
find
love to hear tips
more
from other
there.
people too. So it's if anybody has comments about how they do things, I love to incorporate that into Riverbent articles. So yeah.
Okay, amazing. Well, I just really can't thank you enough for all that you're doing to lower the entry into rafting, because that
Thank
is
you.
one of the most magical things. So I really admire that and appreciate that. And I think it's really cool that you
Thanks.
got
And
with
I
that.
want to give a couple of shout outs to a couple of groups that we love
Yeah,
to support.
please.
One is Goals on Rivers, which is guy Brett Hockmuth out of, he's over by Denver, and he takes kids rafting. So they're in fact just going on a trip to Chile this week. So check out Goals on Rivers. And then we also help every summer with a Diversify Whitewater event in Fort Collins on the Poudre, and that's for people of color, Black, Indigenous people, especially a lot of kids on that trip. And so it's a one-day trip on the Poudre. And again, that just introduces more people to the joy of river running, which gets more people involved in river conservation. And I think that's super, super important.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing. And I'll link those in the show notes too, so people can find them easier.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Amazing.
All right. Well, any other closing thoughts? I think
No, I don't think so. I think it's just every, you know, my final thing is there's more than one way to do all of this. So my advice is just to get out there, you know, start with an easy overnight, something like Ruby Horse Thief on the Colorado or an easy day trip, and just get more comfortable. And if you feel uncomfortable, go take a class or talk to an expert and just incorporate that into your system. But there is no better thing to do than to go on a river trip, especially with kids, especially in this time when everyone is glued to their cell phones. Mm. It's one of the few opportunities we have to really unplug and turn off civilization. And I think it just makes us better humans when we do that.
Wow. Snaps for that. I couldn't agree more. Well, you can find more information about Riverbend on Michelle's website, Riverbend. And more tips and tricks for planning. So thank you. And have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Tate. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
All right. See ya.
Thanks. Bye.